Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
Hello, and welcome to Gaze at the National Parks. Shall we try that again?
Yes, because you look like a babushka woman.
I do, because I'm freezing. It was warm earlier. Hello, and welcome to Gaze at the National Parks. I'm Dusty.
And I'm Mike.
Gaze at the National Parks, if you're joining us for the first time, is a podcast where we hike one or two, sometimes trails, in one national park per episode. Today's episode is all about the western side of the Rocky Mountain National Park, known as Grand Lake.
Right, it's the section that we started in when we arrived at Rocky Mountain National Park. Speaking of arriving, let's talk about our transit from the airport in Denver to Grand Lake.
Yeah.
And how we had like some many shocking revelations that we had to go through in this journey of ours.
Oh, we had many shocking revelations. Well, first, we landed in Denver and we got to the like rental car agency, you know, connected to the airport. We get into the car and we set off and we're driving like, I don't know, like an hour or so into this drive, because we had to drive like 3 hours.
It's like 2.5, I think.
It was like 2.5 to 3 hours.
I think that was our first
to our Airbnb,
shocking revelation.
And we were like, oh, we have to drive 2.5 hours after we get off this flight.
At like 9 o'clock mountain time, but right. It was like 11 o'clock Eastern time.
It was like 11
we
o'clock.
We time traveled, you know, but it wasn't time in our favor. Yeah.
Right.
So that was, you know, shocking revelation number one. Although we were kind to ourselves the next day because
we were.
Grand Lake was literally 5 minutes from our.
We were.
Yeah.
We were kind to ourselves to book an Airbnb that close to one of the yeah. park entrances.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are driving and we get to a point where I needed a restroom or
a Diet
snack
Coke
or something.
Yeah.
And so we see a sign that has some stuff on it. And I was driving at the time. So I pull off. This car that we had rented was, we actually really loved this car.
Yeah, it was
a lot.
Good.
It was a Ford EcoSport.
Mm-hmm.
It was perfect. And it was a hybrid car.
Yeah.
So the gas like cost hardly anything the whole
yeah.
time.
So we're driving and we pull off into this like kind of like restaurant but like office parky kind of area that like looked like it had a convenience store.
It did have a convenience store, but that convenience store was closed.
And we got out of the car and we're like, okay, well, where are the car keys?
Because you didn't need keys to actually crank it. It was the fob.
Yeah.
So you just sort of like
push
you
to
know,
start.
As yeah, it was a push to start kind of car, but we could not find the fob.
No.
No.
And I full on Libra panicked.
Oh, you Libra panicked.
I like,
Libra panicked.
We have
too.
To go back to the airport.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to never get to Grand Lake.
Well,
it'll be like 1 in the morning.
This is what I was thinking. I was like, you know, because I don't have a push to start car.
No.
No, I mine cranks with a key.
Right.
Like, you know, cars used to do
when we were young.
Right. So just like Adele said.
That's right.
So. Because we were unfamiliar with how these cars worked, we were afraid that we had started the car and the fob was maybe still at the airport.
Right.
And that we had driven this far without the fob, and that if we turned off the car, we weren't going to be able to start it again.
Right.
And then we would be really, really, you know,
up the creek.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, okay, like, let's look for them. And then, yeah, it was... there was like at least 2 minutes of just like, well, look there a little bit harder. Right. You need to look here harder. Yeah. Like from both of us.
Yeah.
Until we did finally find them.
Yeah.
They were like in the
they
corner.
They were tucked on the dashboard, like in the window. It was like kind of the weirdest spot for them to be. But like, I think I spotted them and I was like, okay, here they are. Let's go. Because yeah. we were just wiped at
and
that
also
point.
The convenience store was closed.
Right.
So there was like no point.
No. And you right. were angry.
Yeah, and I was angry that it was closed, yeah. but whatever.
On to the next Diet Coke
On
dispensary.
To the next Diet Coke dispensary.
I'm looking for adventure, want to follow on the trail. Or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky. Don't wake the sun, there's so much to be done. And the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real, you can feel. You can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national parks. At the national parks. Follow you, I'll follow you there.
So we continued our drive toward Grand Lake, and so I have a fear of heights.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Yeah.
It gets triggered, you know, by very high places. But
yes.
We were driving through the mountains very late at night. It's like now basically midnight.
Right.
We were winding through these mountains and I was like, I'm really glad it's actually really dark and that I can't actually see how
yeah.
far the cliff is. Because the roads were really wide. Like it wasn't like a, like, like I felt like we were very close to a cliff ledge.
Careening towards the edge.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were fine. But yeah, by the time we arrived in Grand Lake, I was exhausted from driving.
Yeah. Yeah. We had actually switched off. We had stopped after careening through the mountains and like kind of meandering our way. There's a town on the other side called Winter Park. So we had actually stopped there and we switched off drivers. And I kind of drove the rest of the way because I think we were both kind of exhausted, but I was happy to help you out there.
Yeah.
And we got to this Airbnb that we had booked that was like above a brew pub that like was all in one owned by,
it was called World's End.
Yeah.
And it was
people.
Wonderful.
And it was great. It was such an easy check-in and we just basically collapsed into this like really nice kind of cabin-y feel-y kind of like bedroom.
Yeah. And we looked at the, you know, Mike's favorite thing would have been to like wake up at 5 a.m. and like get out on the trails. But I was like, no. Like we do want to talk to the park ranger.
Right.
And
that's always a good thing on the first day.
We were like, let's get to, you know, the
ranger station.
The ranger station when it opens, which the internet said it opened at what time?
8. But we were kind to ourselves and we slept in. We're like, we'll do it at 9. It'll be okay.
Yeah,
or like 8:30, I think is what we ultimately decided on.
Right.
But
and we were literally 7 minutes away from the visitor center. We're just going to sleep in as much as we can.
Yeah.
Here.
So. And, you know, by the time we, you know, got up the next morning, we had our continental breakfast, which was like perfect, which was just like betraying our, you know, our girlfriend McDonald's and
right.
sleeping
but
with our mistress
no
continental
nearby.
Breakfast.
There
yeah.
was no McDonald's nearby.
So we did what we could. And we had planned ahead. Usually now we kind of like pack trail mixes and pack like bars and stuff in our bags, in our check bags, so that way we have stuff so we don't have to like go to the store first thing, like to interrupt hiking time. So we were all set as far as like snackage goes. So yeah, we piled in the car and we headed off to the visitor center. Like with Dusty saying, it was only like 7 minutes away. I think it's the closest we've ever stayed to like a park or a visitor center.
Yes, it was.
And we ended up getting there and lo and behold, the ranger station wasn't open until 9.
Yeah, we got there at like 8:45 or 8:35 or something
like that. And we actually like were just like looking at the placards outside the ranger station.
There was
and
some lovely like, you know, museum like exhibition stuff on the outside.
Yeah.
And so I read all of that.
And
they had a whole thing about how to become a park ranger.
Yeah. And there was a ranger or like a maintenance worker that had stepped out and he was like, oh, they actually open at 9. But, you know, I can get you a map if you want. He was like super kind. And we're like, you know what? We're just going to go in. We're going to talk to the rangers. And we waited a little bit longer. Some other cars had pulled up at that point. But, you know, we definitely like gay speed walked to the front.
We did. Well, you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I went for patches.
That's right.
So,
which is usually what our relationship is.
Usually how yeah. it goes. Yeah. Like you go to get in line to talk to the park ranger mm-hmm. and I go look at patches and t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So when we finally did get to the park ranger,
right.
Her name was Christy
mm-hmm.
and she was so informed and so mm-hmm. sweet. And
yeah.
she told us essentially if we were going to hike on this side of the park, we were going to need snowshoes.
Right. She said like if we had gone out early enough, there were parts of hikes that we could do before we would need to turn back because the snow would start to become soft because it was a very sunny day and we would just sink through. There was no way around yeah. that. So she was
and
like,
we had no experience yeah. with that at all.
Yeah. So she
I mean,
was
except
like,
living in New Jersey, but that's not really the same thing.
No. So she was like, listen, I really recommend snowshoes. There's this place in town called Never Summer Mountain Sports.
Right.
I would go there. And she was like, she also kind of gave us some pointers for Estes Park. She's like, listen, I think if you go over here, there may be like these trails are great, but you might need snowshoes there. But I'm sure there's a place to rent snowshoes on the other side. And we're like, perfect. Thank you so much. So we turned around and we drove back downtown.
And we did. And she had also told us about some of these like cacti that had some flowers that were blooming on it that we might be able to see on some trails over in Estes Park because they were just starting to bloom. Actually, she and the other park rangers shared a lovely moment about that.
They nerded out real
they
hard.
They totally
about it.
Nerded out real mm-hmm. hard about these flowers.
But good for them, you know?
And yeah, I was like, of course. I was so inspired by their joy about those flowers.
Mm-hmm.
So the
joy about those flowers is a Lifetime original film, too.
It is, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we head to the mountain sports place in town, which is called Never Summer Mountain Sports.
Right.
We go in there and we rent some hiking shoes, which the people there.
Some snowshoes.
So, yeah, that's what I mean. Snowshoes for hiking. The people there were so nice. We decided we were like, well, we'll just rent them for 2 days.
Right. And we were kind of concerned only in that they would be closed probably when we got back from Estes Park. And the guy was like, listen, we have a nighttime drop off. I'll show you where it is. And that was like the easiest thing at the end of our trip in Estes Park to be able to come back and drop those off there, which was great. So he's like, listen, do me a favor, though, while you're out on the trail, try to walk in your boots as long as you can and really don't put the snowshoes on until you need them. And
because we had no experience in snowshoes.
Right.
And I think some people try to walk, you know, in like the dirt in
or on
snowshoes
rock. Yeah.
or on rock, and that actually damages the snowshoes.
Right.
They were light. They were super light.
Yeah.
And, so we packed them in the car
yeah.
and then we headed back into the park and we headed to the Colorado River Trail. And with that, let's take a break. Hey, everybody. We are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
It's time for a game, and the game we're going to play today is one we haven't played in quite some time, but it's one of our favorites.
On the trails, yeah, in Rocky Mountain a lot.
And we did. And it's called Commission an Album.
Great.
So for this game, I'm going to be giving you some source material, and I'd like you to find an artist that you feel like would be great to kind of take on that source material and turn it into something musical.
Into an album,
yeah. So the source material that I would like to give you is The Stranger by Albert Camus.
Oh my God, I love that book. That is one of my favorite books. It was one of my favorite books in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, Beck.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes. Beck is weird enough to figure that one out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, actually, I think it's a collaboration between Beck and Bob Dylan.
Oh, okay.
I just think they would just get it.
Yeah.
So that is my immediate thought.
Great. I love that. I feel like that feels right. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. I need to go back and read The Stranger because I feel disliked it in high school. Like, or didn't dislike it. I feel like I wanted to like it more. And
I devoured it.
Yeah.
In like an afternoon.
Yeah.
It was great. Okay, great. Yours.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you The Poetry of Emily Dickinson.
Oh, God. It has been a really long time. She wrote a lot of sonnets. Am I wrong about that?
She was very transparent about her, you know, like, being on inside of this house and never getting out and, like, you know, the well of feelings that she always had.
I feel like Alanis could probably handle her really well.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, you did not just say my favorite person.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, Alanis and the... Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I hit that spot, didn't I?
You did, and I really want to hear that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, real bad.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make that happen.
Okay.
Alanis, we really want you to do a concept album of Emily Dickinson poetry, so we're just putting that out in the universe.
Great. I love it. So we drive out to the Colorado River Trail, and it's about like a 20-minute drive, I would feel like, from the visitor centers.
Gorgeous, breathtaking drive the entire way there.
Yeah, I mean, the roads were super clear, although there was snow all around us, and it was really just kind of incredible to see this landscape for the first time. I mean, we had seen a little bit of it in the dark the night before, but now we're actually in the park, and we're getting a firsthand view here.
And the snow was, I mean, up to like 4 feet of compacted snow.
Mm-hmm.
At times.
We get to the trailhead, and this is like the only toilet we see, like at a trailhead, which was like, you know, we're like, oh, well, this is the first trail we're on. We're just like, oh, there are pit toilets everywhere. That's a common thing. And we're like, here's a pit toilet. Great. Wrong.
We made use, and we started to head off onto that trail. But like, to get to like the actual sign, you had to like crawl over essentially like, you know, hills of snow.
Yeah, you had to kind of bound over stuff. And
while falling into it.
Right, while falling into it. But, you know, for the first length of the trek, we were not in snowshoes. We were carrying them. And were you using your poles too at this time? Or did you wait until you had the snowshoes on? I can't remember.
I was not using my poles yet.
Okay. You just were holding the snowshoes and hiking like that.
I was holding... No, you know what? I think I had the snowshoes in my hand, and I had the snowshoes on my arm, and mm-hmm. I was holding the poles too.
You were just multitasking.
I was multitasking and doing both.
Yeah. So the trail itself, I mean, again, this is, you know, very interesting because it's the first time we've ever hiked like in packed snow like this. A lot of rule of thumb from what we read on the signboards at the trailhead is like to follow the footprints of the people that had come before you.
Right. And that's obviously the smartest thing to do.
Clearly. Now, we do a decent amount of ascent at the start of the trail. Like you kind of like start off with like some gradual ascent and then it happens pretty quickly that you're going like up.
Right.
After a little while, we're on like a ridge that's very close to, we're like at the edge of a river and like on a ridge, like on a hillside.
Right.
And kind of hiking out that way.
And when we get to that ridge, right before that ridge, I think I was like, all right, I think I'm a little tired of carrying these shoes. Mm-hmm. So I am just going to put them on.
Yeah.
And I put them on. And then that you also took that as a moment to do the same thing. So we put our shoes on, the snowshoes on, and we start walking in them.
Yeah.
Which was a new experience.
It was. It was almost like a giant metal flip-flop is like the best way that I can describe it. That's like netted at the bottom. So it kind of reduces because the snow is soft, it kind of keeps the tension away from your foot and kind of spreads it out, I feel like, to the bars that are at the outer edges of the shoe itself.
Right. It displaces
the
weight
over
a larger area.
Yep. So that kind of prevents you from sinking in most cases.
In most cases.
Right.
But we did find that even with snowshoes on, there were times when you just, the snow was soft, so you would just sink right in.
Right. It was less so here on this trail. It was a quiet, quiet trail.
Like, we did not see.
We saw like some people
anybody,
at the trailhead.
I mean, we saw some people at the trailhead.
But they didn't hike, really. But basically, from that point on, it was like quiet and it was to ourselves, which,
right,
with the snow around and being in the woods, because basically we were just like, you know, kind of in tree cover for most of the hike, it was completely, completely quiet.
And let's talk about snow for a second. Because I have gone on record saying that I do not like snow. I think snow is no good, and I wish we didn't have it.
It's snow good.
It's nope, snow good, right?
Yeah.
And I think I still agree with that.
Yeah.
I will say here, at least, I could see where it could be considered pretty.
Right.
But I still didn't like it.
Yeah. But yeah, so we hike a little further and then eventually we kind of get to like our first little clearing area. And I'm starting to notice before we hit this little clearing area that there are some orange blazes on the trees. Now, these blazes don't really seem like they're new because a lot of the times it looked like the tree was kind of engulfing the blaze.
No, they looked like they were put there in like 1972.
Right. So, you know, we did have footprints on the ground, which was a real big help. And the blazes did help a little bit. But we got to a point where we hit a trail juncture. So we were ultimately hiking out to Shipler Cabins, which were the remains of some cabins. And I believe they were kind of like they were about a 2-2.5 mile hike out from that point. And then a little further out than that was Lulu City. And that was like, it would have made our trip like more like 4 miles out. And
right,
so like
right.
an 8 mile hike in total. So that was kind of like what we were looking for as an ultimate destination. But we hit this trail marker and it tells us like kind of where we're at distance wise. So we're about 1.8 miles from the cabins and about 3.2 miles from Lulu City at that point. And that's the first little kind of clearing that we come to. And then eventually we're back in the woods again.
But we're back in the woods again, and it's a little bit brighter outside.
Right.
It was the first time I was really experiencing like, okay, like actually the temperature is fairly warm, but yet there's snow everywhere.
Right. I think it wasn't too long after that we kind of just delayered a little bit because we had layered up pretty good.
Right.
Neither of us decided, which is usually the case, to bring like a winter jacket. We just were prepared to layer. So I had like a North Face rain jacket on and like a waffle knit shirt and a t-shirt on. And I was like, oh God, this jacket has to come off. And you were kind of in a similar situation.
Well,
there.
I had decided that I was going to make use of the running tights that I no longer wear because I am not like a marathon. I'm not running marathons anymore at this time. So I decided, I was like, I'm going to hike in these tights and I'm going to make this work. So I was in a pair of tights plus my boots and then like a shirt and then this vest that I had gotten to wear on the trail. What started happening while we were hiking in our snowshoes was that the snowshoes would like kick snow up and the snow would land in between like the opening of my boot and my leg, which was in the running tights. And like it was freezing like down the back of my foot. And I was like, oh, this is so annoying. And I had to keep like digging snow out of the back of my boot.
Yeah, you
and
didn't then it have would, the like, best experience
there. No. And then it kept melting and it would like add to like making my foot like all soggy. And it was difficult like going out there.
Yeah. I definitely feel like I had like a little bit of an easier time in the snowshoes than you did because you were also having some issues later on with the straps coming loose, and that coupled with the snow kind of coming into your boot was definitely like making you very quickly irritated about the whole situation.
Oh my God, so irritated. Yeah.
And it was our first time. Like, I think we were just like a little green with that, which is understandable. And the guy at the Mountain Goods, the Mountain Sports store was very helpful and very informative, but he just was kind of like, okay, here's what you do. And like, you know, here's how you strap in, but it wasn't like anything like, here's the technique. Here's how to prevent snow from getting here. It was just
right.
kind of like,
I think it just
comes with the territory,
just
right?
comes with the territory.
So, you know,
and we're, now I understand why they have like the big openings of pants at the bottom, even though I think they look hideous.
Right. Get that boot
which
cut jeans.
You were wearing those that day.
I did. I had like breakaway pants.
And you were yeah. not having that problem.
No, because they covered like my boot openings, which was really nice. We hike a little bit more and we're really not in dense tree cover at this point, but we're still in the woods and we're kind of like in and out of like these little openings and little clearings. And we get to this point, there's a blaze on the tree, and then we kind of open up into a much bigger clearing.
Yeah, and I would describe it as like a meadow or something, you know, or what it would be in like the summer or something.
It was a pretty big meadow.
It was
yeah.
big. And there were footprints going in lots of directions. Like
most of them were directed in one direction.
Yeah, yeah, like you could see like people had walked out to like take pictures or like had, you know, get a little closer to this other thing and then they'd come back to the main set of footprints.
Right, and we were pretty far beyond the sign point at this point. So we're like, we have to be pretty close to the cabins. So, you know, like Dusty said, it looks like people had walked out to one point and then like kind of walked out a little further and then come back. And there were some footprints that kind of continued across this giant meadow that was at least a football field, if not more,
oh,
like double
I think
a football
it was
field in length.
More like three or
football,
four
yeah.
football fields.
So we, you know, follow the main set of footprints into another set of trees. And all of a sudden, we lose the thread. The
yeah.
thread is gone.
And we do not know which direction these footprints are going.
Right. There are footprints over there, but they aren't making any sense. There were some points like, you know, a little further back where it was like, oh, footprints went this way. So we're like, okay, well, there aren't any blazes on the tree here. Let's backtrack a little and let's try these sets of footprints. And then we
and
got to
we
a point.
Did, and we essentially encountered the exact same thing. It's
right.
like, they walked out for a bit and then they stopped. And then we were like, okay, well, now what? Wandering aimlessly through a forest was not something I was interested in doing.
Right, right. Without any breadcrumbs to like lead
right,
us back.
Right, exactly. And there were, I mean, I honestly saw like three blazes the whole time. There were like definitely places where blazes were, but
right.
they had been broken off
right.
by then.
So, you know, we kind of made this executive decision that, you know, there's no point in trying to just like beat ourselves up and kind of go against the grain here. We were, you know, having a little bit of a struggle with the snowshoes and we're like, you know what, let's just turn around. We've kind of started to adopt the doctrine of no FOMO more and more on these trips. Not that that hasn't been part of our doctrine from the get-go, But this is one of those hikes where it didn't seem smart to continue on, even though there was plenty of light left. We weren't about to, like Dusty said, kind of play around with getting lost in the woods. So we just kind of headed back the way that we came, following the footprints that were there.
And on the way back, the snow getting into my boots became like the worst.
Yeah.
So I took the buff off of my neck, and I used it and tied it around my boot.
You trail hacked it real good.
Because it was like, I need to create a barrier between, you know, to cover this area, you know, between my leg and this boot so mm-hmm. that the snow doesn't get in. And then you were very kind enough to offer your buff, and I did the same thing on the other leg.
Yeah.
I mean, that came after I was like, no, I don't need your buff. And I just worked with one for a little while, and then I like walked some more, but still was digging, you know, snow out of the back of the boot. And then you were like, just take my buff. It'll be fine. And so, thank you. And then I put it around my other foot. And then I was like, good to go the rest of the day.
Yeah. Well, I was also like very apt to give it to you too, because I had bought like a really cool bandana at the sporting goods store.
That's right.
So I was like,
full of stores and constellations.
That's right. I'm going to wear my bandana. I was living that bandana life. But so we hiked back, and, you know, it was incredibly beautiful out there. One thing that we like definitely noticed was that it was just like moose poop city, or like animal poop city.
Oh my god. I'm guessing scat it was city. Moose poop or elk poop, right? You know,
Because that was like all over the trail. So it was really interesting to kind of like, again, things that we were seeing for the first time, and probably things that were a little bit more apparent on the white snow,
right?
Was just like animal droppings kind of everywhere.
Right.
The trail itself was, as we kind of get back into the like the denser wood, really, really nice, because you're along that river again, and it's so peaceful. And like that sound of running water and running through the snow was such like a really calming thing. And it's always a calming thing.
Even though there was snow about, like you could at times hear that river.
Right. Like, the melt was happening. Right. Yeah. But yeah, so we kind of winded our way back down. And as we got to like the point where we would be making like the major descent kind of back down,
We saw a family coming up. I think a couple of them were already feeling that ascent.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, it was, we told them, we were like, listen, we hiked about this far and then we lost the footprints, so we turned back around.
Right.
They were like, we're only doing this for about, you know, this 45 minutes or so, and then we're coming right back.
Yeah.
We continued on. We took our snowshoes off before we like stepped onto the pavement of the parking lot, but it was like, we had to fall through 5 feet of snow in order to get through the parking lot.
Well, at that point, it was past noon, so the sun was high. The snow was starting to really melt, so we were losing that time frame, like, for being able to hike, even just in boots, as the ranger had said earlier. And our snowshoes were doing a decent job, but they were also starting to fail a little in those spots.
Exactly.
So we were happy to take those off for a little bit. We were like, listen, there are two other hikes that we want to try to do. Let's head to this other one. And that other hike was Green Mountain. And with that, let's take a little break.
Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone in between, it's time for Drag Queen Corner. And please welcome to the stage, Miss
Willa Fjord.
So this name is inspired by the pop diva, one-hit wonder, Willa Ford, also known as Amanda Williford, but her last name deemed her Willa Ford. I think she was also more famous for just hosting MTV Spring Break.
Mm-hmm.
But she had the song, I Wanna Be Bad.
Mm-hmm.
But her name...
I Wanna Be Bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Willa Fjord, because a fjord is...
A fjord is a, if we remember from the Jeopardy that you eviscerated me for.
many Jeopardies. Many,
yeah. So a fjord is a water feature that's a long, narrow inlet with steep sides or cliffs, which was created by a glacier.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like she is a Nordic queen.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Like she is sort of like, you know,
a little Flight of the like Valkyries.
That also fairy mystical kind mm-hmm. of like fantasy.
Oh, yeah. She's living that fantasy life exactly. up there. I feel like she does like live that Valkyrie lifestyle.
I think,
and like there's an armor type component
yes.
to her outfits. And I feel like it's a lot of gold.
Oh yeah,
a la like almost a la Julianne Moore in the dream sequence in Big Lebowski.
Oh, movies I didn't see.
Yeah, movies you haven't
sure
seen.
But okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would also say I think she wears this like white out contact lenses, so mm-hmm. her eyes just look white.
Right.
Like I think she's like that kind of fantasy.
Okay.
Like I think there's something, you know, like deeply magical about her. I think she lip syncs to Annie Lennox.
Oh,
and the
Eurythmics,
like that kind of weirdness.
Oh, is it like Here Comes the Rain Again?
Yes, exactly.
I think it is.
Right, right.
Yeah, 100%. I feel that Annie Lennox vibe.
Yeah,
for sure.
There's definitely something like woodsy and very sort of, you know, like woodland creature mm-hmm. about her.
Nymph-like.
So with that, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Miss...
Willa
Fjord.
So, you know, we take a little bit of a drive back towards the entrance to the Grand Lake section of the park. And we pull off about 10 minutes down the road on our left to the trailhead for Green Mountain. And Green Mountain was another hike that was recommended right. to us when we were at the ranger station.
And it leads
earlier.
To a place called Big Meadow.
Right.
And so we were told it was really pretty there and we wanted to, you know, like go and see it.
Right.
And so that was why. And we were planning on doing this and then getting back in the car and then doing this other like 4 mile hike down a little closer to the entrance that would hopefully not require any snowshoes.
Right. That's what we were told.
Right. So we get on this trail, the Green Mountain Trail,
mm-hmm.
and we start heading toward Big Meadow. And we did the same thing again, which is we stood in our boots and we carried our snowshoes.
Right.
But we got about 15 feet and we were falling through and we were like, nope, we have to put them on now.
Yeah.
And so we just put them on right there.
Well, there was like a couple too that was like a little out on the trail and they were like, oh, where did you get those? Like, have you used them? They were like asking us questions like we were
right.
like pros. And we're like, oh, these old things?
Right.
No, we were like, oh, so we rented them downtown. They were, you know, they've been very helpful and they weren't that expensive. And we kind of went through that with them. And they're like, okay. And like was like, and they work really well. And as soon as I said that, I like plummeted through the snow
totally.
With them on and they like laughed at me and I
totally.
Was like, but they do work really well.
Right.
It was definitely like comic
now,
timing.
At this moment, you know, you had sort of concocted this plan that we were going to do this third hike afterwards. And I was over here going, you know what I would love is to just do this hike and then call it a day. But I felt like it was a little too premature to make that offering.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I have already arrived at this conclusion. I'm going to see what happens and see if Mike can organically arrive at this conclusion by himself. So
you and I both did that to one another this trip.
Did we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we set off onto this trail, which was, I mean, a gradual incline
right.
most of the time on
yeah.
this trail.
Yeah.
Like it was, I have
we
to say.
We were headed up.
Snowshoe hiking for me, at least, It required all use of my legs, but also like a ton of core. Like,
oh yeah, 100%.
My core was like so.
Also, you
like,
were using your
and
arms.
Snatched at the end of that, like, and using my arms with the
poles.
With the poles, because mm-hmm. you didn't have your poles out.
No, I didn't use my poles until
pride.
Like, it was not pride. I think I used them at some point. I think the Cub Lake hike in Estes Park, I pulled them out for that.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't use them then. Which is probably stupid on my part. And most of the reason I use the poles are because like my right knee kind of locks up a little bit. And I find that like offsetting the weight is very helpful, but I wasn't really feeling any strain on my knee in the snow. I think it was like a lot of moving slow, a lot of not moving over rocky terrain, despite the fact that the snow was difficult. It was like, for all intents and purposes, not very jarring to my knee. So I was poleless.
It wasn't jarring to your knee until we were like, you know, about midway through, and we had seen a few people.
Right.
And the first group of people, we were like, how long is it until Big Meadow? And he was like, I don't know, like another half mile.
Yeah.
And then we walked.
Lies.
For what felt like another half mile.
Yeah.
And then we talked to another person, and they were like, oh yeah, it's like probably another half mile. And that, you know, brought back all that sort of like Yosemite Falls trauma for me. Also, that was when I crumbled and died.
Right.
And that is when I was like, yeah, no third hike for me today.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this. Like, I'm so tired already as it is.
Yeah.
And what the thing was about that hike was we kept passing these meadows,
like big meadows
over to the side that looked, because we were in the middle of trees the whole time, basically doing a gradual uphill in snowshoes. And when we would pass these big meadows, we were like, oh, well, is that it? I don't think so. I don't think that's the big meadow. I think it's a
it's
meadow.
A big meadow, but not the big meadow.
And when we were passing one of them, you just like ate it, like right in.
Oh, my left boot and snowshoe went sunk into the snow, like a few feet in. And I could not unjam myself by myself.
Right. So and I like, had to help pull you
I don't
out.
Even think I would have been able to take my boot off, like if I would have had to have like dug through the snow. So you did have to like pull me out. And like I had already fallen through a few times. So it wasn't like completely dampening my mood. But at this point, like the wet experience that Dusty was having on the inside of his shoes from flicking snow, because my boot had gone in and was stuck there, I was like fully immersed now. And also, let's remember, folks, that like water is flowing freely underneath the snowpack because stuff is melting and it's drip dripping down.
That's right.
So I was hitting like puddles as I was going through too. So I was like starting to feel like the little bit of anger that was kind of arising that you were probably feeling like
long ago about like having wet feet and having, you know, it just like, you know, a wet sock rubbing up against everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, very peaceful, kind of idyllic sort of hike. We did hear some woodpeckers like along the way.
We did.
And like some other animals, but we didn't have any sightings of anything at this point. And you know, I think we passed probably three groups of people. Like Dusty said, the first group, it was like four guys. Then it was a group of two guys. And then it was this other group of two guys. And they're like, it's really not that far. We're like, okay. And we're hiking and hiking. And I think the both of us like are starting to hit that wall. And you had already probably hit it.
Oh, I was just slowly crumbling.
And
all
you were
day.
Like, listen, what are we gaining by continuing to go out here? Look at all these big meadows that we've seen. And I was just like, you know what? I really do want to hit this terminal point for this hike. I feel like, you know, we kind of got turned around on Colorado River Trail. I feel like I would have loved to have seen the cabins and gone out that far. So let's like just go a little longer. And we kind of made like a time agreement. And it was like, listen, if in 10 minutes we haven't hit the meadow, we're going to turn around.
And also, you know, there's a sort of like fundamental sort of difference in things. Like if we're doing a hike that has like an ending point, like cabins or like a peak or like a something,
mm-hmm.
like you naturally are like, well, I'm hiking this until we get to that thing.
Right.
And I ultimately want the same thing.
Right.
But if the conditions change, I'm the first one to be like, no, I'm good. You know, so Which I think like works in our favor both ways. But yeah, at this point I was like, we have fallen now through the snow like right. a dozen times each. So
yeah, so here's my time compromise for you. And like lo and behold, like we start to descend like a little bit.
Right after we made this choice.
Right after we made this time choice. And we like
started to descend and there it was.
There's Big Meadow.
Big Meadow. And it was a big meadow. Oh, it was huge.
It was bigger than the big meadows we thought we saw.
Yeah. It was totally worth seeing.
Yeah.
I thought it was beautiful. I was like, yeah, now I understand why they said come out and see this.
Yeah. It was even larger than that very large meadow that we had just experienced on the Colorado River Trail, right. which was very big in and of itself. So
right.
there was a bench there so we could actually sit. It was clear of snow and we kind of just like sat and snacked a little bit. And then we were like, all right, well,
we gotta turn around. Now we gotta trudge back.
And, you know, we had to do our little bit of uphill work there at the beginning, but right. the nice thing was
everything else was downhill
at that point.
We did, on our way back down, we still fell through a number of times.
Right.
And that just like reconfirmed like, okay, like we're done for today.
Exacerbated our like, yeah. anger.
At one point, you finally were like, okay, we're not doing the third trail. And I was like, score one for me and zero for Rocky Mountain National Park.
Because so, that's what we do. We right. play against the parks.
We headed back down and on our way out, we ran into that same family.
But it was just the dad and one of the young girls. So it was the family was a mom and a dad and two teenage daughters.
Snowshoes.
No, they all three of the mom and the two girls had snowshoes, but the dad didn't.
That's right.
On the original hike we were on Colorado River. And then we, you know, saw the family on the way, like right at the trailhead as we were exiting. And we're like, hey, like, this is how far it is. Like, and they're like, we have like literally a half hour. Like the other two didn't want to come with us. So I think that's exactly how he said it too. He's like, the other two didn't want to come with us.
Right.
So we're just going to hike this by ourselves. Right, and we're like, okay, well, happy trails to you. At this point, we are like, Fully soaked through in our socks.
Like we take off our snowshoes and we walk across the parking lot back to the car. I take off my boots and my socks, which are like entirely wet.
Oh,
and
I had to wring my socks out. Yeah. Like full wet immersion.
And then I put my sneakers on.
Yeah.
And then, and that was when we called it a day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We were like totally, totally zonked there.
Let's put these hikes on the Karen Stone scale. Now, it's going to be a little hard because it's going to be like, we don't actually know what these trails are like without snow. So it is going to be like...
Snow biased.
So right. The Colorado River Trail.
The Colorado River Trail, I actually don't think was in the grand scheme of things all that difficult. I would imagine too... In the non-snowy times, it wouldn't all be all that difficult.
It'd be super easy, I'm sure.
I'm going to say it's like a 3, maybe.
I'm going to give it a 4, yeah. only because of that ledge that felt a little treacherous.
I think so, but I just feel like that would be something that would totally be stemmed with right. no snow.
So, yeah. It gets a 7 out of 20.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Green Mountain. I'm going to give it a 5, only because of the gradual uphill and all of the like times we fell. So yeah. I mean, I'm gonna do it with the snow bias. So it's 5 with the snow bias, and it would probably be less without.
I feel that too. I do feel like there was a little bit more work involved here, just because there was a lot more incline than the Colorado River Trail. So I'm gonna say a 5 as well on this one. You know, the snow really was a hindrance here. And again, that was partly because it was later in the day, so the melt was a little bit stronger because it was a warmer day too. Like, we had some like crazy beautiful weather when we were in Rocky Mountain. Like, it ended up being a lot warmer than it was supposed to be.
It was a gorgeous
and
time.
Then like we left Rocky Mountain and it snowed again. Like,
exactly.
So we were kind of in that weird moment in time where some stuff was melted, some stuff was still walkable, even
but
though
wasn't
it was snow-packed.
Snowing. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. So we're going to give that one
a 10 out of 20 on the Karen Stone scale.
And now let's play some Jeopardy.
Okay, Dest, hit us with your Jeopardy first.
Okay, so I find it to be very, very important to know your mountain ranges.
Oh my God, I hate you so much.
So this is called Know Your Colorado Mountain Ranges.
No, there are so many of them.
Well, let me explain. Really, there's one, and that is the Rocky Mountains. And then there are sub-ranges throughout, and all of them are included in the Rocky Mountains.
Oh, I hate you.
So, I find it to be very, very important to know which mountain ranges you're looking at. So here we go. For
get ready for failure, folks.
For 100. I have designed these clues to help you understand the name. So here we go for 100. This is southwestern mountain range of the Rockies that extends into New Mexico are named after one of the four biblical evangelists and translated into Spanish.
What are the San Marco Mountains?
Incorrect. What are the San Juan Mountains?
Great.
We saw them many times. Know your Colorado mountain ranges for 200. The name of this southernmost sub-range of the Rockies, when translated, means the Blood of Christ Mountains.
What are the Sangre de Cristo Mountains?
Correct.
Because I only pointed that out a million times.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. For 300. This high, rugged, west-central mountain range of the Rockies is named for the antlered animals that graze there and are often posing for photographs near the Rocky Mountain National Park Visitor Center.
What are the Elk Mountains?
That is correct, the Elk Mountains. Moving on to 400. This southwestern sub-range of the San Juan Mountains shares its name for a medical tool used for injection of vaccines so we don't spread measles.
What are the Needle Mountains?
That is correct.
Look at that.
Look at that. You're doing better than you thought.
Mm-hmm.
And now finally, know your Colorado mountain ranges for 500. These north central mountains in the Rocky Mountains are aptly named for the season it most feels like, or more accurately, for the season it doesn't ever feel like. And it also shares its name with a popular outdoor mountain gear store located in Grand Lake, Colorado.
What are the Never Summer Mountains?
That is correct.
There we go.
You got 4 out of 5,
girl.
4 out of 5. Look at you go.
The $100 being the one that tripped me up.
There you are.
All right. So my Jeopardy category is called Centennial State because Colorado is named the Centennial State because it was founded in 1876, 100 years after the founding of our nation.
I didn't know that.
So this, in this category, you'll be guessing a state based off of the clues about 100 years after its founding.
Okay.
Great. So Centennial State for 100. This state joined the Union in 1850 after numerous rushes brought people west. 100 years later, in 1950, and this state's Midas touch saw the establishment of studio bases of NBC and CBS within its bounds.
What is California?
That is correct. Centennial State for 200. This 1864 joiner to the Union would in 1964 see a plane crash from Bonanza Airlines, their only crash with the fatalities in their 23-year-long history, 10 miles south-southwest of this major city and gambling mecca.
What is Nevada?
That is correct.
All right.
Centennial State for 300. In 1945, 100 years after its founding, this sunny state was the top listed state to move to after California. While air conditioning window units weren't readily available till 1951, people made the most of its humid and mosquito-filled air.
What is Florida?
That is correct. Our penis of America. Centennial State for 400. 100 years after its establishment in 1989, this evergreen state saw the first of 6 years of new seismic activity from this ticking time bomb mountain that exploded 9 years prior in 1980.
What is Alaska?
Incorrect. What is Washington State? And I'm talking about Mount St. Helens.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. And our last clue, Centennial State for 500. Better late than never, This southern state adopts its flag in 1912, 100 years after its founding. Its solid blue field adorned with a group of pelicans must be a direct nod to that giant river that deltas there.
What is Louisiana?
That is correct.
Because the pelican is the Louisiana state bird.
There you go. And that's Centennial State.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. And we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Follow us on Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks, or email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by Dustin Ballard and Michael Ryan.
This episode was edited by Dustin Ballard.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman with Mariella Klinger.
All original artwork featured on Instagram is by Michael Ryan. We would also like to acknowledge that while hiking in the Rocky Mountain National Park, that we were on the traditional lands of the Ute, Apaho, Cheyenne, and Comanche Indian tribes.